Welcome into another episode of Tailgate Talk SEC Week 14 recap coming at you. Now, if you clicked on this thinking it was going to be coaching stuff, I will make that in another video that will come out also today. But this video right here is just going to be football. It's going to be what we saw on the field this past weekend, and we'll talk through the playoff implications of these games. Now, this weekend, I said it on the show, on the preview show, and everything else that I did last week. My favorite weekend of the year. It is so much good football. It is so much football that's just filled with hate, which is a great thing, and just so much consequential football where really seasons can just boil down to the 60 minutes of football that you played this weekend right after Thanksgiving. So it is the best weekend of the year, and let's just get right into it. We'll start with the games on Friday and then knock off the ones on Saturday. Friday was some pretty good action. You had the Egg Bowl to start off. Ole Miss won that game 38-19. I was worried about Ole Miss coming into this game with the distractions. Right, because this was a week removed or so from when we found out that Lane was going to announce his decision, we thought, the Saturday after the Egg Bowl. And when you come out for that, then you have to go on the road, and you know that this could potentially be a playoff eliminator if you're Ole Miss, even though in my mind it shouldn't have been if they go 10-2. But if you drop this game to Mississippi State, you have your second loss, and then your head coach leaves, there were talks that could maybe be a playoff eliminator. But luckily for Ole Miss, that wasn't even something they had to worry about. I mean, they came out and absolutely dominated the Bulldogs. And Mississippi State is a good team. Like, this could have been a good game, but Chambliss threw for 359 and four touchdowns. Keewon Lacy ran for 143 and another score. This was just a really dominant performance by Ole Miss, and it solidified their spot in the playoff to me. Now, the Lane Kiffin thing. We will get into that really in the coaching episode coming up later today, but I do think that Pete Golding being elevated to head coach is a good move at this point, because not only he's not just getting an interim tag where players know, like, okay, we know this guy and he'll be here for what, maybe just one more game, but they're announcing him as the permanent head coach, which I think is a good move because he's a guy that the players are familiar with, and you've seen what's come out with what he's been saying, both reportedly, you know, to Kiffin out of the Iron Bowl, and then just his attitude and what he brings to the table. I think it's a good hire. And if you're in that building as a coach, what you have to do is you can't really dismiss the Kiffin thing going for ready for the playoff. You have to use it. You have to galvanize your players using that and say, look, this guy didn't think that we could do it here. He didn't. He left. He left even though you guys won 11 games in the regular season. Go shut him up and prove him wrong. That has to be the attitude in the building for Ole Miss, and I think that Golding brings that. So this was a big-time win for them in the Egg Bowl, and it really showed, like, they, even if they were kind of distracted, they're just a good enough team to where it doesn't matter. So I'm really excited to see Ole Miss in the playoff. I wouldn't drop them at all for Kiffin not being there, but I do wonder maybe if the committee will just, like, put them at 8. You know, just drop them a little bit where they still get a home game, but you're kind of in that quote-unquote death spot where then they have to go play, in theory, the winner of the Big Ten Championship in round 2. So we'll see how that goes. But the second game on Friday was Georgia Tech. This game blew. I mean, this game sucked. I thought Georgia was going to blow Tech out of the water. I thought their offense was going to move the ball really, really well against a Georgia Tech defense that has looked soft and really just flat out bad the past 3 weeks. And they only scored 16 points. 16-9 was the final in favor of Georgia. And, I mean, Gunnar Stockton only threw for 70 yards. Had a touchdown, had a pick. Nate Frazier, he ran for 108. Didn't get in the end zone. But the passing game for Georgia, I mean, Stockton was 11 of 21. And 5 of those completions went to Zachariah Branch for 53 yards total for him. Like, I know that Georgia is not a high-flying, zip-the-ball-around offense, but I can't really explain to you why there was zero air threat in this game. Because Georgia Tech's secondary, it's not like it's good. And obviously you can lean on Georgia Tech, you can run the ball. That should have always been their formula, to focus on the ground game. The 70 passing yards is weird to me. And I know that rivalries get weird. So I'm not worried about it long term moving forward for Georgia. But this game was just weird. The game was weird. Haynes King played a pretty decent one. 181 yards passing, did have a pick. Only 69 rushing yards as a team for Georgia Tech. I mean, 121 yard gap in rushing yards between both teams. That's pretty substantial, and it's a big reason why Georgia got it done. And their defense played incredible. You know, holding Tech to only 9 points, only forced 1 sack, but did have 7 TFLs. Georgia just kind of flexed their muscles, right? And they proved that they're still the power in the state. This game was definitely closer than they were hoping it was going to be. to the point where Tech did get a Hail Mary at the end to send the game to overtime. But, you know, Georgia got it done. And now they will be going back to Atlanta for their second straight game to play Alabama in the SEC Championship. Georgia's obviously locked in. They should be locked into a top four seed in my mind. Because I think the top four seeds are just going to be the Big Ten and SEC Championship teams just arranged. Right, so I think that Georgia should be locked in the top four. If Bama wins the SEC, then they should strike up the top four, I think. If they don't, then they'll still be, you know, 9 or 10 or whatever it is. But that's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about Georgia. This is a big-time win for Georgia. 11-1, you know, even though it wasn't always pretty this year for Kirby Smart, he still got his team to, shockingly, win 11 games. They just win. They just win so many football games under Kirby Smart, which sounds like a bad analysis, but it's also just true. It's what he does. And you really can't count them out of any game. You can't count them out of any playoff run because of the type of coach that Kirby Smart is. So that's why Georgia's back here again. 11-win season, and they are playing for another SEC championship. Super quick. Let me just have some energy juice. That's a fun way to say coffee. Texas A&M went to Austin and lost to the Longhorns by 10. Their first loss of the season. First half, it seemed like we were getting the same old Texas that we've been looking at all year, where they're just like, oh, they're kind of in this game. They're just not there at all. Then they dropped 24 points in the second half. And that whole thing was in large part due to a running game that hasn't really existed. Quintrevion Weisner ran for 155 yards on 19 carries. Arch Manning had 53 yards on 7 carries. Because Arch only threw the ball for 179 yards. He was less than 50% passing in this game. 179 and a touchdown through the air. But the ground game was really good. Nick Townsend ran one in. Arch Manning ran one in. Receiving, Jack Andrews had a big-time game. 4 catches for 93 yards for the Longhorns. And on the other side of the ball, Marcel Reed, 20 of 32 passing, 180 yards. No scores and those 2 picks late. This was the game where A&M didn't look right. You know, they didn't look right against South Carolina, really at all, but that was South Carolina at home, where they were able to sort of look in the face of the death that was being down 27 and just be the better team. Texas A&M, roster-wise, is not the better team than Texas. Texas is one of the most, if not the most talented teams in the country. So when you're getting sort of flexed on by them, when you're getting behind on them, you can't then just rely and say, calm down, execute, we're better. Because you're not. You're not better than Texas. And that's kind of what showed. Marcel Reed didn't have a good day passing. On the ground, they were fine. Reed was the leading rusher with 71 yards. But receiving, I mean, Casey Concepcion, only 57 yards. Mario Craver, only 44. They had no passing touchdowns. Defensively, they were able to force 2 sacks, which was more than Texas. They only had 1. And 10 TFLs for A&M, only 2 for Texas. So defensively, A&M really kind of won it. They kind of sort of won the defensive battle, but the turnovers and just A&M's offense's inability to really unlock those explosive plays that we've seen them have all year, that was the difference. And Texas's environment was really good, and they knew that they were back against the wall, and like this was their last chance to show that they believe they deserve a playoff spot. And I'll talk about that real quick. Texas went 9-3, and the argument that they're going to put forward is that why did we schedule the Ohio State game if it's just going to keep us out of the playoff? Because we're scheduling these big-time out-of-conference games that no other team went to play Ohio State out-of-conference. No one had the balls to go do that, especially in Columbus. So you're going to hold that against us and leave us out of the playoff. That's not fair. And we're just going to start scheduling cupcakes week in and week out. You're going to get left out because you lost to Florida. Florida won 4 games. Texas got dominated by Florida. I was at that game. It was only an 8-point difference on the scoreboard. Texas got moved for 60 minutes by a Florida team who lost by 30 to Kentucky. And if you're Texas, you had to go to overtime against Kentucky. You had to go to overtime against Mississippi State. You only beat Vanderbilt by 3 at home. That's being phrased as this big-time top 10 win. Like, no, they push you to the brink because you're not as good as your talent profile is. They're just not. Texas, roster by roster, they can beat anybody on any given Saturday. That is true. There were 3 times this fall where they didn't. And because of that, you have to leave them out of the playoff. I don't care how good your roster is. You lost three games, and one of them was horrible. Let's say their losses were to Ohio State and Oklahoma and Georgia. Let's say they don't that Florida game doesn't happen. Or you could say they lose to A&M, whatever, as their third loss. Those three losses, you can have the discussion. That's fine. Because then you can really play strength of schedule. You know, like Oregon didn't play anything like what we played. Notre Dame didn't play anything like what we played. Then it's fine. When you mix in a loss to a Florida team who is garbage, and at that point in the year, Lagway was still hurt. The entire second half of that game, he was on one leg. That is horrible. It's a terrible loss, but more importantly, it's your third loss. It's not a Notre Dame NIU situation because that wasn't a three-loss Notre Dame team. You're a three-loss team who lost to a four-win conference opponent. You don't get to go to the playoff just because you played Ohio State for that reason. If the third loss was better, we'll have the argument. And I'd probably be in favor if their third loss was to A&M or something like that. But it wasn't. It was to a Florida team who sucks. Texas should not be near the playoff because they lost three games. It's cut as dry. That's it. And we'll know a lot tomorrow night on Tuesday when those rankings come out to see where Texas is at. Because with all the teams who will not be playing this weekend, a lot of the rankings are probably static. So we'll see how it goes. Moving on to Saturday's action. Breeze through a few here. Kentucky at Louisville. Holy crap. I mean, I thought Louisville was going to win. I thought the game was going to be competitive. 41 to nothing. I mean, Louisville just absolutely dominated the Kentucky team. And now Mark Stoops has been fired. As of this morning, he's been fired. So Louisville killed Mark Stoops. I thought that was going to happen preseason, and it ended up happening. Really bad loss for Kentucky in the year 5-7. Louisville, dominant win. Clemson went to South Carolina, 28-14 Tigers. This game was decently competitive, but in the preseason, it felt like this game was going to almost be a playoff game with how good Clemson was thought to be in South Carolina, all the buzz with Sellers, Nick Harbor, Dylan Stewart, all that. I mean, 7-5 versus 4-8 now, but Clemson got it done. They go to 7-5. Carolina ends the year off at 4-8. I would imagine Shane Beamer is retained because if he wasn't going to be, it would have happened by now. And if he's able to keep most of that roster in place, or at least those three big guys in Sellers, Harbor, and Stewart, this team can be really good. So we'll see what happens. Missouri at Arkansas, 31-17 Missouri. KJ Jackson looks like a lightning bolt. I cannot wait to see him full-time as Arkansas' quarterback. Ahmad Hardy, just another casual 157 on the ground with another touchdown. So a good win for Missouri to finish the year 8-4. And if you're Arkansas, 2-10, and the Silverfield hire is not what you wanted. But you just kind of have to look forward. And the question is, even though you don't like Silverfield, can it get any worse? Do you really think that Ryan Silverfield is going to go 1-11 next year? Because if he doesn't, it's improvement and it's growth. So for Arkansas fans, you kind of have to take your expectations and manage them relatively to, like, this is what this team actually is. If we win four games next year, we doubled our win total. So you just kind of got to ride out and let it go. FSU at Florida, 40-21 Gators. This game was decently competitive for the first half. And then Florida kind of realized, oh wait, they really can't do anything about Jaden Ball. Jaden Ball ran the ball 38 times for 266 yards and two scores. This was one of the most dominant showings by a running back at Florida that I can remember seeing. I mean, he just carved him up. He needed 96 yards coming into the game for 1,000 yards on the season. How's 266 out for you? Awesome game for Jaden Ball. Florida keeps FSU out of bowl eligibility, so they end 5-7. Florida ends 4-8. And the crowd in Gainesville was really impressive. For a fan base who was fighting for their fourth win and got the news the day before that they were no longer in the race for Lane Kiffin, to show up like that and be that loud for that long and that late in the game, that Florida fan base is something special, man. And obviously, having FSU in the building helped to fire him up. But it was a good win for Florida, right? It's something that you can look at and say, season, you can probably call it a wash. But we were 4-2 at home. We beat FSU to end the year. We're getting a new coach coming in John Summerall. Let's go. You know, flush it and keep moving on. So we'll see what Florida does to come out next year. Just three games left here. We'll go LSU at Oklahoma because this was so boring. The total for this game was in the mid-30s. It ended up 17-13. Ended up at 30. I took the under in this game. Loved it because there was never a chance either team got to 20. this was always going to be a physical war. Oklahoma closed it out. They scored 14 of their 17 points in the second half. Like, they were down late, kind of late in this game, but they came back and did it. John Mateer, in a game where they only scored 17 points, he threw for 318 and two touchdowns, three picks. The defenses in this game were pretty opportunistic. And you saw that because Mateer, I'm not sure when the last time this year he threw for 318 was, but I'm also not sure when he last threw for three picks. So it was kind of a go big or go home approach for Mateer through the air. The running game wasn't what we've been seeing from Oklahoma recently. And obviously that is a credit to LSU's defense. It's great defense. But Torrey Blaylock led them with only 42 yards. John Mateer had 27. Xavier Robinson only had 9. But Isaiah Satania, stop me if you've heard this before, he had a 58-yard catch. I mean, this dude is due for an explosive every game. He was 9 catches for 121 total and a touchdown. Javonte Gibson had 66. On the other side, Michael Van Buren, not great. 14 of 25 through the air for only 96 yards, touchdown, and a pick. Only 85 rushing yards total for LSU. There wasn't much there. It was a decently spread out passing attack. It wasn't really spread out with guys who were successful. It was just spread out with guys who also had a catch or a pair of catches. Defensively, LSU forced no sacks. Oklahoma, no sacks. No sacks in this game would have blown my mind if you told me that going into it. But then turnover-wise, you know, LSU had three picks. Harold Perkins got one. A.J. Hulsa got one. D.J. Pickett, who is an absolute freak, got one. And Peyton Bowen got one for Oklahoma also. But this game was just ugly. It was just an ugly defensive battle that, you know, it really profiled as. And for Oklahoma, being able to survive this game against an LSU team that is incredibly talented, and they probably had a decent idea of who their next coach was going to be at this point, to the LSU players. So they were coming out inspired. Like, they had some juice. They knew they were kind of auditioning for Lane Kiffin, and Oklahoma was able to fend them off and secure a playoff spot. Like, it's impressive. And Brent Venables going from almost fired in the preseason to now having them in the playoff. I called it. I'm going to brag about that. But I mean, really good showing from Oklahoma. Sorry, I won't say that. Really impressive from Oklahoma to be able to close this game out, get their 10th win, and get to the college football playoff. We'll see where they're ranked tomorrow, obviously, but Oklahoma will be going to the big dance. And LSU, ending the year 7-5, just got to flush it. Just got to flush it because you had everything with Brian Kelly, that whole mess of a saga. Flush it down the drain. Lane Kiffin's coming in. You should be able to retain most of the roster that you want. And whatever you don't want or can't retain, just plug and play from the portal, because that's what Lane does. So LSU, really bright future. Oklahoma, really bright present. They can go get it done in the playoff this year. Vandy at Tennessee. The agenda against Vanderbilt being pushed is already obvious. You saw it after the Texas game with the graphic that they were showing. They were comparing playoff resumes, and it said that Vanderbilt was 0-2 against ranked teams. Come back to that in a second. But it gave Texas credit for a top 10 win against Vanderbilt. Vandy beat both LSU and Missouri when they were ranked. They beat South Carolina when they were ranked. And they've now beaten Tennessee when they were ranked. Texas's only top 10 win was Vandy, but they're no longer ranked now. So the double standard there to push for Texas having a top 10 win while Vandy not having a ranked win is obvious, lazy, and pathetic. And I understand that Vandy lost to Texas. Head-to-head means less to me when you have a better record. Vandy only lost 2 games. Texas lost 3. Ohio State, Texas lost to Florida. I'm not doing this again. But Vanderbilt, what a game. 45-24, going to Neyland and absolutely smacking the crap out of Tennessee is something that nobody does. Just no one does it. And they dropped 45 on them. Diego Pavia threw for 268, ran for 165, had 2 total touchdowns, did have 2 picks, but the offensive production was there. Joey Aguilar, good day through the air, 299 with a touchdown. He kept the ball safe. Deshaun Bishop carried the ball 20 times, 97 yards. But, I mean, Vandy running the ball. Pavia, 165, touchdown. Cedric Alexander, 115, 3 touchdowns. MK Young, only 15 yards. Got in the end zone. A pretty spread out passing attack for Vanderbilt. Cheryl had 76. Trey Richardson, 75. Eli Stauer, 64. This Vandy team is so complete. They had 4 sacks, 10 tackles for loss. Vandy has got to be in the playoff. They have to be. Just, I know you'll see Miami's in front of them, BYU's in front of them. Just jump them. They're a 10-2 SEC team whose quarterback is going to be a Heisman finalist. If I just presented you with that information in the preseason, I said an SEC team is going to win 10 games, and their quarterback is going to be in New York for the Heisman ceremony. Would anybody have had any questions about them going to the playoff? You wouldn't have. Because this is a playoff team. It's a playoff team. But the fact that there's a gold V as their logo is holding them back right now. Because people aren't comfortable or used to the fact that Vanderbilt can compete with the best teams in the country. They can. They can. You want to say Texas is this monolith? They're also on the road by 3. If that game was in Nashville, guess who I'm picking to win? I'm picking Vanderbilt. Vandy has got to be a playoff team because of what they've put together. The fact that their quarterback is one of the best, if not the best players in the country. And they have the resume to do it. I don't care about Miami. I don't care, and I don't care about what the hypothetical Vegas lines would be. That's not what determines the playoff. I don't care if BYU or Miami or whoever would be favored over Vanderbilt. That's not what you're looking at. That's not the criteria. Notre Dame would be laying 7 to Vanderbilt on neutral field. I don't care. Vandy has the better wins, and they have the same record. That's my whole case. We'll see what happens with Vandy tomorrow. What I'm worried about with them is that if they just move up to like 12, Vandy doesn't have the opportunity to play next week. And that 12 ranking is not really a playoff spot, right? Because you have the group of five who come in from like the 20s and things like that. So we'll have to see how it goes. But the final game here, the Iron Bowl, Alabama at Auburn, 27-20 tied. This game was awesome. I tweeted out in the second half after Auburn's big completion and then touchdown that the Iron Bowl was iron bowling. I feel like that was the best analysis I could come up with at the time. But Ty Simpson threw for only 122 yards in this game with 3 touchdowns. If I just showed you that in pregame, you would have said that Bama has no chance because they have to throw the ball. They have to be air raid. But they ran it for 158. Jan Miller ran for 83 yards. Daniel Hill had 39 and Ty had 31. There was finally a semblance of a rushing game for Alabama against an Auburn defense that, frankly, I didn't think they had any business running the ball against. And for Auburn offensively, Ashton Daniels, who I don't think should have been playing in this game, should have been Deuce Knight, don't care, but he was 18-39 passing for 259, had a touchdown, had a pick. He did run for 108. But the fact that Ashton Daniels ran for 108, what do you think Deuce Knight would have done? He would have run for a 160 and probably gotten in twice. But Jeremiah Cobb, he only ran the ball 10 times for 33 yards. He did get in, though. Malcolm Simmons, big-time game. 3 catches for 143 for Auburn and a score. Cam Coleman only had 5 for 43, and he had that fumble late. So not his best game. I mean, Auburn put the ball on the ground 4 times. And they might have all been in the second half, like in sequential order. But they only lost one. They only lost Coleman's. Auburn did force 3 sacks. Bama only forced 1. But Bray Hubbard had a pick late. You know, Bama just made more plays when it mattered, and Auburn just made more mistakes. And that really just summarizes what Auburn has been for the past few years. Right? And just Bama was able to flex their muscles, be the better team, be the more mature, be the more smart team, the more disciplined team. Gosh, took me a while to get there. And they're 10-2. And Alabama should be in the playoff because you can't punish a team for having the audacity to play in a conference championship and lose. You just can't do that. My question is, can someone jump them? You know, can BYU, by winning their conference, jump Alabama? So Bama isn't left out because they lost, but they're pushed out by a team that jumped them. Because what you'll see, like, Vanderbilt can't jump Alabama because they have the same record and the head-to-head. So that can't happen. Really, what Bama and Vandy fans need to be cheering for is Texas Tech to lay the hammer on BYU again. Because that should get BYU out of there. And then Miami and Utah are just kind of sitting there. Neither of them will be playing this week. So if you're Alabama, you've got to be cheering for Texas Tech. Because the only way that they don't get in is if BYU beats Tech. And then through that conference championship, there will obviously be an auto bid. They jump up and just kind of push Bama down. So Bama is left out, not because they lost, but because somebody else won. If that makes sense. So SEC fans, you've got to be cheering for Texas Tech this week to get BYU out of there. And try and keep Bama. Try maybe get Vandy in, but we'll see. We'll have a whole playoff preview thing later in the week after we get the Tuesday rankings. We'll get to that, but man, this was a fun weekend of football to watch. It was fun to recap. I know I was all over the place, so if you trooped through that, I'm proud of you, and I thank you for watching that whole video. But I've been Will Thomas. Thank you for watching this episode of Tailgate Talk SEC, and I will see you guys next time.